We have made it all the way to episode 99.
Red balloons.
Dude, why didn't we do Nina for this episode?
I don't know, I just thought about it right when you said God. 99. You just had to say that out loud to me. It would have happened before. I don't think it...
God, that's it. We're shutting the show down. We're clearly not qualified to do this. Yeah, we'll make up for it. We'll do haircut 100 next week.
Oh.
Yeah.
I feel like 100 needs a special episode, but...
Well, we're not very special people.
Wow.
Okay. So we're going to move on to episode 99.
We are bad at picking number episodes.
I'm very excited about this one because we're talking about one of my absolute favorite human beings of all time this week.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Miss E.G. Daily. I love this woman so deeply for so many reasons, and I'm very excited to talk about her.
See, and she's fun to talk about because you probably know her from somewhere, but it could be from literally lots of different things. So you because may know her from one thing, but you don't know she's done the other things.
She has done everything.
Mm-hmm.
And including, like, very specifically in the year 1985. If you look down her career.
She was so busy.
She did a lot of stuff in 1985. Wow.
Very busy lady.
Okay, so let's get to talking about Ms. E.G. She was born in September of 1961. In L.A., she's an L.A. girl, which is completely unsurprising.
Yes.
You can tell everything. Like, you can tell L.A. women when you meet them. Like, they are a very, very awesome, cool, particular kind of human.
And
they are very noticeable. You know, like, you can spot an L.A. woman very easily.
And she is that.
She
even
is
though
the,
she's very tiny.
She's the prototypical L.A. woman, yes. Her real name is Elizabeth Ann Gutman. And I love the E.G. Daily stage name. That's hilarious. Finding info about her early life is very difficult. There's not
I
a lot
agree.
Of info about
I
her
tried to...
her super early life. The earliest I was able to find of her is her being a part of the Righteous Apples, which is not something I had heard of before researching this. Had
Me
you?
Either. No.
This was new info I had learned about her. The Righteous Apples was kind of like this electric company, sort of. It was like this, you know, how in the late 70s up through the early 90s, it's like... We love to get groups of kids together and put them on TV and have them sing together and have various songs about different things. And also they were like playing characters and not themselves.
Oh, you want me to sing the Kids Incorporated theme song again like I did before? I won't do that.
Okay.
But that's but I will.
Yes. She played a character on The Righteous Apples named Sandy Burns, which is also a good stage name.
Yes.
E.G. Daily was way more like 80s cool, though, than Sandy Burns would have worked for the 70s. But, you know, they released a self-titled record in 1982 that has a couple of tracks on it that you can find on YouTube. I'm not going to roll any clips here or anything, but just interesting to listen to and see her early stuff. You can actually find some performances of her singing on the show, too, as well. We'll toss one of those in the doc on the website so you can check that out. At some point, though, before 1985, E.G. signed with A&M Records. And her first gig was, of course, her songs that she did on the Scarface soundtrack. She had been in the movie Valley Girl. She appeared in the movie Valley Girl. And then I'm pretty sure Scarface was the next year, right? I didn't write that down, but I think Valley Girl was 82. And Scarface, I'm checking myself on
Scarface
this.
Scarface was like 86.
No, Scarface was 83. Yeah, Scarface was 83.
Okay.
So she got, this was her very, very, very first musical release, best I can tell, was her being on the Scarface soundtrack. If you want to hear all of our complete thoughts on that, you can
we have an episode.
Yeah, you can check that episode out. And interestingly enough, that was MCA Records, so she did something with them. I wonder if she like had a deal in the works with MCA, because usually like artists who haven't had a record yet that are on a movie soundtrack are put there to like promote albums that are going to come out. So that's how they like beef up the artist. Cause the Scarface soundtrack would have had like Debbie Harry on it, who was already a known name. So you buy it for the Debbie Harry song and you're like, oh, who's Elizabeth Daly? Yeah. Cause she was Elizabeth Daly then. So at some point after Scarface, she links up with our good buddy Jellybean.
I'm smiling. You can't see it, but I love him.
And our other good buddy, Harold Faltermeyer, who we haven't done an episode on, but we do love Harold Faltermeyer.
Who doesn't?
As you probably could have guessed. And they more or less worked with her co-producing this this debut album of hers. Before her debut record was released, though, she did appear on the soundtrack to the movie The Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. That was like a summer 1985 movie. So her first like exposure, I think, in that year would have been the song Waiting.
Yep.
On the Breakfast Club soundtrack. Love it. This is my second favorite song on the Breakfast Club soundtrack. Number one's got to go Carla DeVito, obviously. But
I mean, I love this song, and it's like, I don't know, I just love the production on it. I don't really necessarily love the song. I just love the production of it, and I don't know. It just sounds good.
Yeah.
It sounds so, it's so enjoyable to listen to. It just sounds so crisp and good and fun, and I just love it.
I'm going to gush about her voice a lot in this episode, but she can literally sing anything.
She can do anything.
She has this extremely distinctive voice, as we would learn later in her career. But she's got this crazy, awesome, just husky, powerful voice. But yet she can hit these crazy high notes
and it's still sweet at the same time.
Yes,
it's
it is.
It's a sweet voice, but it's
it can be breathy baby doll, but it's also it's like coming from a very like internal place.
That is something really good about her, because usually a raspy voice is like one of those like old lady learned, knowing.
Not her though.
No, I mean, it's a sweet voice, but it's got something behind it. I love it.
Sitting on ice while the clock is watching, losing face, dreaming of a better space and time. Oh, I'm about to use my feelings. I'm about to use my feelings. Waiting. If I can get out, I'll lose my reasons. Waiting. Waiting.
Waiting did appear on her debut album that came out later that year, which was Wild Child. This album sadly did not chart. I don't know why, because she had a couple of hits off of it, so I think it's unusual that the album itself did not chart at all. I'm not sure how that happened.
I have an idea.
You do?
I don't know. It's just this era when like Madonna was becoming big, and I feel like all the other single, like solo women who were Madonna-esque became, I don't think she's Madonna-esque, but I think everyone was just like, cool, another Madonna-esque.
Yeah.
It's like Regina.
Yeah.
Like, it's another Madonna wannabe who's just different, you know, and it's, I feel like she probably kind of got in that little
bit of a rut. That's fair.
I think it was just the time.
Do you think we have anything like that now? Like, is there an artist who other similar sounding artists are coming out and they're like, oh, that's not so-and-so?
I don't know much about current music. Because I was gonna say, like, old woman.
I was trying to imagine that happening now, like, oh yeah, she's just trying to be Dua Lipa. Like, it doesn't fit.
I mean, if you think about it too, like, you know, when Lady Gaga was coming out, everyone's like, well, she's just trying to be Madonna. Like, they're still doing it. Gwen Stefani, when she first came out in the 90s, was like, she's just trying to be Madonna. Like,
yeah,
I think
that's
it's
just weird. Maybe it's just Madonna.
Anyone, I think also now I think we don't have as many people who are that iconic in that.
I mean, Madonna is the GOAT, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine, but.
Anyway. Back to E.G. She released Say It, Say It as the first single off of Wild Child. This is her only entry into the Billboard Hot 100. Peaked at number 70.
Thank you, Jelly Bean, because this is a Jelly Bean masterpiece. Oh, yeah. Listen to it, it's Jelly Bean.
This is Jelly Bean's fingerprints all over it. It was number one on the U.S. dance charts, and I love this, number 71 on the Hot R&B and Hip Hop Songs chart.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes, ma'am. When I went to pull her Billboard history, it said one song on the Hot R&B and Hip Hop Songs chart. And I said, excuse me?
Must have been a slow week for hip-hop.
And it was this. Peaked at number 71. She does a very, very cute performance on American Bandstand. She tells Dick Clark that she's 5 feet tall in the performance, which I thought was very noteworthy.
She is very tiny.
And then afterwards, Dick Clark mocks this girl who was trying to hula hoop behind her the entire performance.
Oh,
kind of funny.
Dick.
But she looks great. She's got these sunglasses on. Her hair is all done correctly. She's got these big boots on. Just so cute.
It's adorbs.
Yeah. As far as the song itself, like, it is 1985 pop music.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it sounds like a hit, too. It's why it should be, whenever E.G. Daily has some songs that sound like just straight hits to me. They're not just fun. They're not just good dance songs. Like, they sound like hits. To me, Say It sounds like a hit. I just think it kind of got
I think that
caught
E.G.'s
in the web of everything.
I think E.G.'s songs that were not on soundtracks, like that were her own album songs.
Very soundtracky.
She is, but I think that all her songs that were not on the soundtracks, that were just her album songs, are all very meringue-y. They're very light and airy.
Yes.
And I think that that is probably why they had trouble sticking in people's brains.
You think this is light
brains.
And airy?
Yes, I do. I think this is a very light and airy bubblegummy song.
I like bubblegum.
Yeah, I like it too, but...
It's like you a can candy, do, just like jelly beans.
There are levels of bubblegum, though. Hmm. There's bubblegum that goes a little harder... Britney Spears, Baby One More Time, I'll raise it as an example there. Even, I would argue, Tiffany's I Think We're Alone Now. That's got some very harsh snares in it, yeah. You know. This one doesn't. It keeps it very light. The drum machine sounds are not in your face. The synth is really light and bubbly. Just saying.
Okay, I'll accept.
Now, this song goes a little bit harder, Love in the Shadows. This was a number 6 hit on the dance chart. Again, a big club hit for her. I don't see this having worked on pop radio, so I don't even know if it was released.
This one has never worked for me.
Okay.
It's fine. I've just never, it's never done anything for me. It's just there. It plays, and I hear it. That's
okay.
About all this song does for me. It's fine. I've never gotten it.
And finally, I think this was the only song on Wild Child that she did not have a hand in writing. She E.G. does write most of her own music, mm-hmm. worth noting, which differs from a lot of pop stars of that era who maybe had a similar sound. She does a random cover of the Donna Summer song Sunset People, which is from Donna's Bad Girls album, which at that point, again, it's kind of funny. It wouldn't have been that old. Would have been, what was like 1978?
It's on the Bad Girls
album.
Seven years.
So it's just 6 or 7 years old at that point.
I never really thought about it that way.
Kind of funny. Hmm. It would be like someone covering 5 seconds of Summer now trying to run up the charts again.
God.
I actually really like her version of that song, though. And she still does this one in her live sets now. I was able to find current live video of her.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is such a great Donna Summer song in general. Great, like, also the B-side is Our Love, which is, like, a classic of all time. But anyway, I just hear this, and it's so the same as the regular song, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
It's the original. Still so similar that I feel like it's unnecessary, but it's good.
Yeah, but the production is updated, though.
Yeah, it's good. If you like the original, you'll like this song, because it's not really different. It's just a different voice, I guess, but I don't know. I always go Donna. Limo girl, a whiskey man, starting every style they can on sunset, rock and roll, overnight, underneath the neon signs on sunset, sunset people, doing it right, night after night, sunset.
And finally, we continue with E.G.'s very busy 1985 and talk about her appearances on the Better Off Dead soundtrack. I love, 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 love this soundtrack. It was largely put together by a guy named Rupert Hine.
Very cool name.
Yes. Rupert had a hand in every single song on this soundtrack except the two E.G. Daly songs. It's very strange. If you look in the credits... yeah, he these are the only two songs he did not touch. So I don't know what was going on there. But yeah, this guy's crazy. Rupert Hine, he did stuff with the Thompson Twins. He was like a Howard Jones guy. So he was like big mid-80s pop. Rupert Hine was everywhere. So let's talk about these two songs that he had nothing to do with from the Better Off Dead soundtrack. Interestingly enough, the theme from the movie called One Way Love, Better Off Dead, the CG Daily track. I mean, this is like the 80s movie song to me.
That's exactly what you wrote. Like, it is like the quintessential 80s movie song where it's like...
But it's the one no one talks about. Nobody ever remembers. I don't get why this isn't remembered alongside Don't You Forget About Me or Pretty in Pink or, you know, whatever other iconic 80s movie songs, because there are several of them. But like, I think this song deserves to be counted among them, don't you?
To me, it's like whenever you think of 80s movie soundtrack songs, particularly the ones that you just know from movies and you have no idea who did them, and you have, you know, maybe you know, but probably not. This sounds like it. It's like that dancey, rocky thing. Like, it could be in literally any movie from the 80s with teenagers.
And it's so fitting that she is actually in the movie performing exactly how you see it in your head when you hear this the first time. It's like she and they're the band at the high school dance and they're singing this song. It's just perfect. It's perfect. This is such an 80s high school movie song.
100%.
There is a very funny Facebook post made by Patton Oswalt. It's pretty easy to find if you Google it. He did this very long Facebook post a few years ago breaking down the scene in this movie where she sings I've this never song. Seen it. He's more talking about like the plot devices happening in the film at that point, because it's actually quite a funny scene where John Cusack is all upset because his ex-girlfriend has shown up at the dance with her jock skier asshole new boyfriend, and his best buddy is trying to cheer him up. And it's just like Patton Oswalt's breakdown of the scene is very spot on and very brilliant. And he mentions E.G. a little bit. But it's just, yeah, you should Google that and read it. It's very funny. And A Little Luck, also from the Better Off Dead soundtrack. This is another one of those where I want to hear this deconstructed almost. Like, this would work just... I would love to hear her sing this with an acoustic guitar or a piano.
I could see that, too. Yeah, to me, this also sounds like a quintessential 80s soundtrack song.
So
It could be in any movie, but just, you know, see above, but slower.
What is very interesting is this was written by a woman named Angie Rubin.
Literally, I've heard of her.
Literally, no, you haven't.
I haven't?
Literally her only writing credit ever.
Really?
Her only other credits are as a music editor on a few other movie soundtracks, including Pitch Perfect and Josie and the Pussycats.
Weird.
But her only writing credit ever is this song. And I just think that is really fantastic.
She just gets a job every 10 years?
I guess so. Fast forwarding a little bit to July of 1987 and the movie Summer School, which is really ripe with trivia.
If I had you, never like, heard of it.
Really?
I never knew this was like a soundtrack.
Okay, so if you ever hear a trivia question like one of those tribons, like name, you know, what movie all these people were in.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Harmon, Carl Reiner, Kirstie Alley. And Shawnee Smith, who is Amanda from the Jigsaw series, are all in this movie.
Yeah,
so
I noticed
that
when I was watching the videos. I had never watched the video before. And I was like, oh, man, there are a lot of weird people in this movie.
So E.G. did a couple songs on this soundtrack also. Mind Over Matter was a big club hit for her, number 7 U.S. dance. I love this track.
Always my favorite E.G. Daily song. I love Mind Over Matter.
Yeah, this is just some straight up high energy awesomeness.
And apparently,
but this still was... with the E.G. Daily flair. You know?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It sounds like an E.G. Daily song. It's not just, you know, somebody's thing in a movie. But what I love about this, I'd never known this. I read this about the song. This was originally done by Debbie Harry for the soundtrack.
Yeah. Oh yes.
And
yes.
Then somebody got mad at somebody. Like the record label got mad.
Thank you
about
for bringing
something.
That up. I totally forgot to write that down. Yes.
Yeah,
you are
so
exactly
it was originally
correct.
A Debbie, which it sounds like a Debbie Harry song.
Yes, it does.
It's fine.
Because Debbie Harry was doing some badass high energy music in the mid-80s, and again, nobody remembers that about
on
her
on soundtracks.
All they want to talk about is friggin' Blondie. But Debbie Harry had a dope ass solo career.
Yes,
with a lot of straight up dance music.
Better than Blondie. Anyway, this was originally a Debbie Harry song, and I actually meant to see if I could find like a copy of it, but it never got released.
I know I have heard Debbie Harry's version of this
song.
Yeah,
I think it's probably out there. I actually meant to look it up and then I forgot. And yes. I realized at this moment that I forgot to do that. Anyway, so this is apparently Debbie Harry. Somebody at the record label got mad about something with the movie studio. And like at the last minute, they brought E.G. Daily in to record a version of it. I don't know.
Lesson learned, you should have started with E.G. Daily.
Yes, but also I'm sure Debbie Harry's version was probably very good and she's awesome.
Also, very cute music video.
Yes, adorable.
And one more E.G. song on this soundtrack, Seduction. Oh, I was into this.
Oh, yeah. Super good.
Super, super into Seduction.
How could you not be?
Yeah, this is like the best kind of 80s pop music. It's just like it's checking off all these boxes for me. You know, it's got these great, this great guitar riff. It's got these synths. Her awesome voice. Just nothing not to love
here.
It
may not be something you remember for the rest of your life, but you're going to love it. You're
going to enjoy
your time.
It's one of those album cuts that there were probably kids like me, you know, who were 20 years older than I am, but were listening to this, and like this was their favorite, and like it was the one that they would always wind to on their tape of the summer school soundtrack.
I could easily see that.
I guarantee it. And the final bit of E.G.'s music career we're going to talk about is her 1989 album Lace Around the Wound. Sadly, also did not chart, but she did have one more entry into the charts thanks to the first single, Some People, which oddly enough was a hit on the dance charts, which kind of is confusing
to
me.
I see that sometimes, but I'm like, well, that was a shitty year for dance music. I feel like 1989 was not a shitty year for dance music.
No, not at all.
Because this is not dance music.
Yeah, it isn't. But I will say, I will say that this record, although it is not really in line with my aesthetic and like where if I were her producer, where I would have gone, it's proof to me that E.G. was definitely staying true to herself as an artist because. Yeah. If you look at, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but if you look at E.G. now, the way she is now, her aesthetic and just the way she gets, like, it still all is in line with this record to me. And
it feels genuine.
Yes, it is very, like, it's very much what she wanted to be doing at that time and indicative of who she was as a person and, like, what her style was.
Yeah.
I mean, and I really respect that.
I mean, this song is like more bluesy rock, but it's
exactly.
It's still pop, though. Like it fits
it
on radio.
It is, but it's pop rock. The last the last album had pop rock songs on it, but they still kind of had that 80s sheen. Mm-hmm. This album really is kind of devoid of that 80s sheen. Like this really kind of sounds like it came out in the early 90s.
And if you look at her in the video, like she looks that way too. She's like grown up. She's got her hair not huge anymore. Like she looks more mature. The sound is more mature, but it also doesn't feel wrong. It doesn't feel like it's not E.G. Daily. It doesn't feel like there's some producer pushing it on her.
Exactly.
Which so much of that at that time felt that way when people were making the shift going into 90. Like it was this feels like this is what EJ wanted to do.
The majority of the production and the writing on this was done with a lady named Lottie Golden, who I'd never heard of before, but she has a pretty interesting career. I'm not going to go into it here, but she like is kind of credited with being an innovator in hip hop music with some records that she made.
A lady named Lottie? Because that's one of my favorite names.
Yeah, I love the name Lottie as well.
That's great.
She spells it Lotti, which is my second favorite spelling. I prefer Lotte. I think that's cuter. But either way, she's kind of credited as being a sort of a pioneer with hip hop. Just look up Lottie Golden. It's very interesting. And the other guy is Tommy Farriger. I'm going to say is how we pronounce his last name. Farriger. But they produced and co-wrote the majority of this record with her. And there was also an appearance on one track, though. I have to bring him up. I even scratched out of my notes. I was like, I'm not going to bring this up, but I totally am. There's an appearance by John Van Tongeren, who worked with Berlin in their early days, but more importantly, John Van Tongeren worked with Q, who would become SSQ, and who would become Stacy Q.
Oh, we haven't done that episode.
Yeah, it's coming. Don't worry. It's weird. I got to be in the right mental place. That's like, it's basically like talking about Jesus for me. That's going to be a church episode.
Oh my God, okay.
Yeah, John Van Tongeren was involved with Q that became SSQ, that became Stacy Q.
Interesting.
So, yes, and I know I haven't talked about her nearly as much as it's ridiculous, like, because no one listening to the show knows my true deep love for Stacy Q because we haven't done that episode.
Which
but
is so weird.
I know. But that, yeah, that's my girl. Yeah. So some people, first single, number 33 dance, which is weird because it's a pop rock song. There you go.
Slow week.
She did release one more single off of this, but it was only a promo single, but we're still going to talk about it. This mid-tempo AOR pop ballad called Heart Don't Lie, which I think ended up making it into like some TV shows in the early 90s. Like
sounds like it.
Yeah, it would work perfectly for that.
It's that late 80s adult contemporary.
Yeah, this is definitely an adult contempo song.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like anything that was on that adult contemporary radio station at the time. I don't care for it. I never need to hear that kind of song again, but it fits.
So in remarking where EG is now, this is kind of strange. So we kind of glossed over a lot of her 80s career to talk about her music because we're here to talk about her music. But to give you a very like 30,000 foot overview, she was in Valley Girl, the movie Valley Girl. She played Dottie in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Yeah. Yes.
Loner Dottie, a rebel.
Everyone knows Dottie. Yes, mm-hmm. That's EG Daily. Then her voice acting career really picked up in the 90s, and that's kind of still what she does now. She was Tommy Pickles, of course, on the Rugrats. Mm-hmm. She was the second iteration of Babe, the pig, the talking mm-hmm. pig. She was Buttercup on the Powerpuff Girls, and so many other voice roles that are just incredibly numerous.
She's on some Nickelodeon show now, and I don't know. You can look at the entire children. Thank God.
Her website just has pictures of all the characters that she played. It's quite a sight. It's incredible to see. Also, I'm going to mention this for like two sentences because I really hate defining people by who they married or who they were married to at some point.
I have a whole list. Are you ready?
Yeah,
I'm not defining.
I really
her.
Don't
want
to linger on this. It's just funny to talk about the fact that she was married to Rick Salomon, who was the sex partner in Paris Hilton's sex tape.
Oh my God, it's like Rick Solomon, he was like to me the original like Kardashian. He just never got a show.
Okay, and we are completely famous done with this topic and moving on now.
But this is my favorite part of each.
Oh my God, all right.
Okay, first
make
of
it
all,
snappy.
This lady has dated some interesting people. And I love it because it's like this little lady and she's Donnie. Who's she dating?
Okay.
Like she dated John Eric Hexum when he accidentally shot himself in the head.
Whoa.
You remember? Do you know
no,
that?
No, I didn't know this story.
It's like this guy who was he's like super young and super hot dating E.G. Daly in 84. And he was like playing with a stunt gun.
Oh, shit.
On the thing. And apparently it had blanks and he was like bored on set and he kept pretending like he was playing Russian roulette. And then it did not go well. Anyway.
Oh, no.
So it was like a big deal. But that's who she was dating. He was dating E.G. Daly at the time before she was really famous. Apparently she dated Paul Rubens for a minute during, she's over here being a whole thing. Paul Rubens for a minute during Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Duh, who wouldn't? Apparently Brad Pitt for a hot second. What?
Wow.
And then Rick Salomon, who
yes, Rick
literally
Salomon.
Married and dated everyone in the 2000s. And everyone's like, who the hell is this douche? But that everyone
exactly.
is. But she married him before all of that.
That is what will be on Rick Salomon's eventual tombstone.
Like, and I'm still, you know, 20 years later almost like, who the hell is this douche?
Yes.
But we all know him.
Anyway, we're not going to further sully E.G. Daly by talking about...
no, she's so much more than that.
The dudes
but
in her life.
I just love it.
She has had this incredible career in voice acting and traditional acting since then. And she's still cranking. She was on The Voice a couple seasons ago. I'm not a big reality TV person, but I know she competed on The Voice and made it a couple of rounds
yeah,
in at least.
I watched some of it. She was on Team Blake.
She was. Because again... True to her aesthetic, she still mm-hmm. kind of likes doing. I believe she sang Faith Hill's Breathe yeah. in her audition, which to me, again, fits. Even though she's like from California, this is like her thing. She's like a Western girl.
She sang it better than Faith Hill, too.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yes,
Faith.
She did. But she's E.G. Daly and she can sing mm-hmm. basically anything better than anyone else. So that's all I have to say about this woman who I love. And as someone who really wishes that like voice acting was a thing he could do and get paid for, I really, really respect the crap out of her because she's yeah. one of the people who is a legendary voice actress. And I just think she's the coolest person. And I would love to hang out with her and talk all about it. So, E.G., if you listen to this, hit me up and we can hang out and talk about voice acting and all of your awesome music. Too.
I'll just watch.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I don't fangirl a whole lot on this show. So I feel I'm kind of having a moment here. And I think maybe we better move on before because this is a weird feeling.
I'm just going to watch you do it.
You're yeah, like, okay. So we're back next week. It's the 100th episode. I'm not entirely certain what's going to happen on the 100th episode, so I guess you'll just have to be here next week to find out, too. And that's all I'm going to say about that. In the meantime, if you want to listen to any of our previous 98 episodes, you can do so on our website, which is offbeattrackscast.com.
And if you want to tweet us, because we have the internet, we are connected to it. we are Twitter user at Offbeat Tracks.
Yes, and we answer DMs. I always like to say that out. Mm-hmm. We do answer the DMs. It's but usually me. It's not Danielle.
I never see it.
She doesn't check the Twitter.
It's not that I don't check it. It's just like, you got to tell me when it's on there. And it doesn't always tell me.
Probably because I've already seen it and responded.
That might be it.
Either way, hit us up. We love hearing from you. And thanks so much for being here. I mean, we're almost at 100 episodes. That's crazy. I did not think... 2 years ago, it's just crazy. It's crazy that we're at 100 episodes.
Have we grown as people, Max?
I think so.
I don't know about it. I think I've regressed.
I don't know about you. Anyway, I think I have.
I think I've regressed. But it's cool. It's a process. You
That's
ebb
right.
and you flow. I'm a tide.
That's right. So thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week for episode 100. Bye. Until then, bye.
Bye.